This podcast is brought to you by Amusement Warehouse Magazine, the industry's largest trade publication. We cover amusement parks, carnivals, fairs, festivals, history, safety columns. We really got it all when it comes to the amusement business. Only remaining print publication in the amusement industry on a regular basis. So if you're interested in what the amusement industry has to offer, subscribe today. You can subscribe by logging on to amusementwarehouse.com, carnivalwarehouse.com, or amusementparkwarehouse.com. Welcome to another edition of the Amusement Warehouse Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, an industry legend, Hall of Famer, Mr. Wayne Koons. Thank you so much for coming on, Mr. Koons. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's nice to be here.
Great. So I guess we'll start at the beginning. Tell us how you got involved in the amusement industry, which you've stayed in quite a long time.
Well, I started probably when I was 5 years old or 6 years old. I was with my father. All I know is the carnival business. Especially when I went to high school and everything else. And the summers, I always was on the road with my folks and stuff like that. So that's how it all began back in probably when I was about 6 years old.
And what were your folks on a show or what were they doing?
Well, my father, he was at first one time he was, he started out as in the carnival business. He got a job on the carnival and he was a girl show operator, is a talker.
Barker.
Barker that introduced the show and stuff like that. And then eventually he went to college, to where he got a job where he went in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and he went to college and different stuff like that where he could handle business and stuff like that. So he did a very nice job. When I was 6 years old, and I was with my father right here, and I never forgot this as long as I live today. And in fact, I even mentioned it. I was in Kokomo, Indiana, and I went up to my father, knocked on the door, and I said, "Dad, I'm leaving." And he said, "Where are you going?" "I'm going back to Wisconsin." He said, "I got my suitcase packed and everything. I got my cap, my cowboy hat on, and stuff like that." And I said, I'm leaving. He says, "Okay, go ahead." He packed my suitcase and here I left. It was out there for about 2 or 3 hours. And I said, "You know, I think I made a mistake." Went back and told my father. He said, "What are you doing back here?" I said, "Well, you know, I think I made a mistake because they always had me do the youngest kid had to take the Doniker thing right here, had to take it every night and take it to the place and dump it. And I thought, well, I didn't care for that. I always had a voice of my own. And so then at that time right there, I said, well, I guess I'm going to have to do what you tell me to do. And that's how it started. And from that time on, I've been on the road all the time in my lifetime. I've spent probably 2 months a year with my family and 10 months a year I've been with the carnival people all my life. So I got two different families. You understand? So that kind of breaks that down.
Now, did you stay in it because you were scared of how far it was to walk home?
Well, at 6 years old, you know, you're not too sharp at 6 years old. But I was always kind of wild, and I always felt like I could say what I wanted to say and kept my mouth shut in some ways, but some ways I couldn't keep my mouth shut. You know, and that was my life. How it started, and I've had wonderful, wonderful part of my life. What I've really did in my lifetime, I think what I've accomplished is I care for the working people, the working guys, not the guy that owns the show or nothing like that. So I do have all the respect for that, but I've always looked out for the working person and tried to get them better. I was with my father for 30 years, and we could never go out and eat the restaurant together because we'd get in serious argument because I was always trying to get the guy more money or stuff like this. So he finally told me one day, he says, I'll tell you what, I'm going to take my mother, my wife out. I'm going to take your wife out. You have to stay there and set the show up. So that's how it eventually started, you understand? And then I started doing things and I got more involved. I was always with games and stuff like that. Had my own game, and my father says, you're going to have to go to work for me, you understand, on the rides. And I says, well, okay, because I was doing pretty good on the games because I was clean cut and I was always could wheel and deal with everything, right? And so he said to me, he says, well, I'm going to get you a job right here. I said, well, that sounds dead. Well, what? How much money can I make? $45 a week. I said, you got to be nuts. I make that in practically 2 days. And so that's what I had to do. And so then I had to learn everything about all the different rides and stuff like this. And it was awful. Back in the 60s and the 50s, it was a different ball game, you understand, with all the regulations that never had none of that, none of that too much. But and I really cared for knowing what was going on and doing all I could possibly do. And I broke a many of people up in my life. If you was going to leave on me, you'd have to leave out in the middle of the night, because if you ever did, I would race you down and catch you and bring you back, because I believed in taking care of the people. And in my entire life, with all the people I've broken, I've only fired 5 people in my entire life. Wow. Because I'll make you a better person. I was kind of like a coach, I would feel like. You understand? Yeah, I felt that I could get the most out of a person. You understand? And
that's a good analogy, because a coach has got to be able to fit everybody's different. So they got to figure out, I'm a coach too. I coach tennis, girls tennis.
And I was
figuring them out, and what motivates them is really important.
Yeah, because I came down to Florida when I was in 9th grade. And in the years that I played sports down here, I was outstanding football player, basketball player, captain of all the teams, track. I was fast as lightning. I was really fast. I was the fastest kid in Wisconsin. That's what they said.
That was from chasing down all the employees trying to leave?
Well, that's right. You would never leave. You'd throw your clothes away because they knew I was coming after you. Because I especially didn't want them to leave on the teardown night. You understand, that would be hard because you're always trying to do different things. But I had, when I was scouted by Auburn to come, you know, the game I was playing down here in Tampa, Florida, I think I scored 2 touchdowns and picked up a lot of yards. And so after that, the scout came up to me and he says, Wayne Coons, we got a scholarship for you for Auburn. I said, what's it pay? He said, what do you mean what it pays? I'm giving you a scholarship. I says, no. I got to make money. And he says, what do you plan on doing? I says, I'm going to go to work for my father where I can go out and where I can make some money. And he looked at me kind of funny. He said, well, you do what you think you want to do. I says, I know what I want to do. I'm going to be a carnival man right here. He was kind of dumbfounded. I kind of threw him off. Yes,
well, you're ahead of your time, because nowadays they do get big money when they sign. They get paid.
It's all together. It's all together different, but
it's crazy.
And I just sports. I was always crazy about sports, and I did wonderful. But until I was 60 years old, I used to run 10 miles every day. 10 miles every day. In fact, I work out myself. I work every morning. I get up early in the morning, work out, and doing stuff like this. Right now, you know, they kind of, I guess my kids would say, maybe you should probably just take it easy. You've been doing it for 80 some years, but it's kind of hard for me to do it. I might be looking for another opportunity in life. You know, I got a lot of energy. There's one thing I do is I have energy because I care for the show people. And then we started Galaxy. Me and my wife started Galaxy because they probably wanted me to take it easy with Galaxy. But when we started Galaxy, I told my wife, I said, well, we'll get somebody to help do things and start moving trucks down the road. But I could not, I says, I can't not leave the carnival. I like moving the carnival from spot to spot, you understand? And so that's how we started. And my son is brought this galaxy into a new world, you understand? But, you know, it's that's what life's all about. I don't believe I'm going to really have a hard time. I got my coach ready to rock and roll any day because I'm just a funny duck. I don't ever know what I'm going to be doing, you know? And I would probably like to go visit all the different carnivals and see what their operations is, because I do have a lot of different thoughts that I could probably put in towards it. But, you know, it's another ball game. I'm going on 88, so what do you expect?
Wow.
I might have another 5 more years left. I don't know. See, in the
be like a traveling consultant, like you're traveling with Galaxy and Cell Lights. You could just travel around a carnival and do a little report for them.
Well, it could
possibly efficiency. You could be like a business consultant.
See what happened? There was my brother and my sister and my brother, and we all were raised in the carnival business. My sister ended up to be a nun. My brother is a year older than me. He is a minister, and I never did get to go to church because every Sunday I was moving the carnival, tearing it down, setting it up, until just recently I finally got myself baptized, you understand, by a neighbor next door. He says he wanted to know about my life history. I told him that. He couldn't believe me. He checked me up and see if I was telling the truth. Because it's a different ball game, and 2020 is when I was doing things right here, and I got run over by a bull. A bull knocked me about 15 feet in the air. You understand? Was putting stuff away for winter quarters because every carnival was closed down then. We all were closed down, and at that time right there, I said, "Well, I got to do something. I just can't sit around." And on the December 17th, I said, I want to enter the Honolulu Marathon. What do you mean, the Honolulu Marathon? I said, that is a thing that you had to do it virtually. So I did it. I did it virtually. I did it less than 2 days. You understand? They had to keep a record of me. And for my age group, everybody did it in the United States. I was number 4 in the United States.
Wow.
Everybody did it in the world. I was number 6. So it made me kind of keep myself in shape, and I've always kept myself in shape.
Impressive. So when did your dad get his own show? Like, what year was that? And tell us about the show and the name and all that stuff.
Well, that was on the Heth shows, you understand? Mm-hmm. He finally was, we had a game that you knock the balls and cats off right here, and you win teddy bears and stuff like that. And I worked for the guy that he was the brother of the carnival owned the show. And so my father bought the show. They wouldn't sell the show unless I worked for him for 2 years, you understand? Because I made him a lot of money. And so my father had to make me for 2 years. I had to work for the guy because I had a lot of gab. I mean, I would keep the show open longer just because I could, because I was kind of clean cut, I guess, back in those days. I had a lot. I would give teddy bears away just for the young ladies to come and talk to me. You understand? So, but that is life. Then I met my beautiful wife back in there in Keokuk, Iowa. You understand? Which was fantastic. And I met her for 3 weeks. We were married for 45 years. It would have been 61 years this year. And that's one thing I'd probably do. I'd probably give everything I own today if I could spend a week with her. But that's life. You never know about life. I got 3 good kids. Scott and Kelly is my daughter. And then my youngest son, Todd. So they're both in Galaxy. And I'm just a carny man and just love the carnival business. And that's kind of what I might have a hard time to try to get away from it. I don't know if I can even do it, you know, but you've been doing it all your life. What do you expect to do? You know, there's so many good people in this carnival industry that I care for. And I guess that kind of stems from the thing that they made me the Hall of Famer or whatever it is. It's what you care for people, you understand? And I brought that in my life, and this was played by ear. What else can I do?
when your dad bought the show, he changed the name, right? And how many rides were you moving at that time?
Oh,
where'd you go?
Time when we had the show, we moved it to Century Corner after I got with the World's Fair. I helped put the World's Fair on with Patty Conklin.
You understand? Right. 1964 in Seattle, right?
That was 1962.
62.
I got right now in my pocket, I got the ID for 1962. I've kept it in my pocket ever since that.
Wow.
And then
can
I got
show it to us.
We took a sky wheel. Yeah, well, I have to dig it. We took the sky wheel from Birmingham, Alabama. My father calls me there on a Sunday night. He says, "Hey, we got to take it to the World's Fair in Seattle, Washington." I said, "That's 3,200 miles, 3,700 miles." He says, "Yeah, but you got to have the thing set up too, because you open up." So I drove that thing by guy with my car and two Skywheel loads. We drove it. I never went to bed for 7 days. I never went to bed. Yes, I don't know what the heck it was. I was half, but I've always been a good show. I'm used to a guy who can drive 1,200 miles like it's nothing. But that's why that Danny Houston said I should have been a race car driver. Because I believe in moving a show. But back when my father, we had the show when I started out years ago. But after we got Century 21 shows, we used to move 99 tractors, 99 loads, you understand? I used to move them. The car, well, I could fix anything. I was pretty good, I guess, at that. They call me the fixer. You know, if I couldn't fix it, I didn't know what I could do. I used to take things apart that were good just to make sure I could put them back together.
That's how you learn.
Well, that's what you learn. There's so much in our life, in my father's life, in the thing. I've worked for probably 7 people in my lifetime. I'll start out with my father. I worked for him for 30 years. I worked for Jim Murphy for 20 years. I worked for NAME for 19 years. You understand? I worked.
Was it 19 years? Wow, I can't even believe.
I worked for Dick Chance, and they flew me all over the world. They had a problem with a ride, and then I worked for Straits for 1 year. I wanted to see what a railroad show was, and I said, "Boy, that railroad show! I says I can move a carnival a lot faster than a railroad. The way they move, they're as slow as they are." So old Mr. Straits calls me in the office. He says, "Hey, Wayne, I'm going to ask you a question, just between me and you. What kind of dope are you on?" I said, "What do you mean by?" He says, "There's nobody can run here, run there, move this stuff, all that." He says, "What the heck?" I said, "Well, that's life. That's why I live my life. I'm kind of geared up a little bit." He says, "You sure must be." You understand? So I've spent a lot of time with different things, with manufacturers and stuff. And it's made a big difference, you understand?
That's amazing. The Seattle World's Fair story, the reason you had to bring it was because the Seattle wheel wasn't ready, right, from the Velaris?
Yeah, with the Velaris brothers. They were nice. I knew them pretty good. They were older man, both brothers, you understand? And then I took the sky wheel up there and set it up, you understand, with Harry Batt and Patty Conklin. I was at that time, I was 25 years old.
Wow.
And it was an experience in itself. You understand?
And you met Patty Conklin when you were there?
Yeah, Patty Conklin, a gentleman and a scholar, a fantastic, fantastic person. What it was. And I was kind of young. He kind of wanted, he used to say, hey, because I had a connections. I used to be able to have behind the sky wheel. I put some boards down where I could drive in there. He said, "You can get on this fairgrounds quicker than I can get on the fairgrounds." You understand? So he would, we would spend the time, you understand? We'd go to restaurants and eat and stuff like that. And so it was something else. I really enjoyed myself. I spent too much money. My father made me pay everything back. I spent it with $1,000. I spent some of the show money, but he made me pay it all back. I mean, that was my father. You understand?
And Patty Conklin was a little bit older at that time. That was kind of his crowning achievement.
He was older, but he was very smart. Very, really was It was the greatest for everybody made money. Everybody made money. The show people did. You understand? And that was it. And then after that, my father bought the Seattle Wheel. I put it in the park, there. And then I took it from there and tore it down, went to Jackson, Tennessee. Jackson, Tennessee, the first time it was ever on a carnival, we tore it down, moved all the way down there. We were so tired, we couldn't even operate the ride. We had to set up. My father said, "What do you mean? You get it all the way here and you can't even operate the ride?" We all passed out. He was hot at me for that. I mean, my God, he made me work like I was crazy. But I mean, that's the reason why we didn't get along in some ways just then.
You pushed it. That was the first Seattle Wheel you bought, right? The one from the fair, or the one that Alan Herschel built later?
We bought the Space Wheels. That's two Sky Wheels by itself.
Yes, yeah.
And then we sold it. My father, we sold it to Alan Herschel Company for $50,000. We got the patent rights. Yeah. We sold the patent rights, and then they built the Sky Wheel. So we went. I think that was the third Skywheel that we had. We brought it to Mobile, Alabama, played the Mardi Gras, and then we went to Bessemer, Alabama, and that's when my father told me we had to take it, and I had to take it to Seattle. Yes, and we,
yeah.
What was really wasn't three rides, was just two rides. Okay. With just two tractors, semi brand new tractors. I never went up a mountain before. And so it was going up there trying to get the mountain to get over there. And I says, "Well, look, they got a sign there saying you got to slow down." After it took me 6 hours to get on top of that mountain, or 3 hours or whatever it was. I said, that's for suckers. I went down the hill so fast, the guy with me passed out riding with me. I said, "Oh, if I wreck this thing, my father's going to kill me," because I never went down the hill. I didn't know you had to gear down right here, hills like that. So that was an experience. I'm lucky I made it up there. You understand? But we did.
The Seattle Wheel eventually got finished, right? And it came to the World's Fair. Did you have to leave, or did you stay the whole time?
Well, no. I stayed there for the Sky Wheel, but then I stayed there for the giant wheel that with the Seattle Wheel that we put it in a park. We had it in a park. You understand? But then we tore it down from there. I took it down from there. I was there for a while. Then I took it back into the United States. I mean, anyway, to Jackson, Tennessee. That was the first time it was ever on the Midway.
Wow. Yeah.
So
that was the one that the Velaris built, the Seattle Wheel, right?
Yes.
Which you moved?
Yes. And then they built another one too, which and
Herschel built.
Yeah, Herschel built it.
Yeah, they said Jimmy Drew told me that they made it. They sent it to Herschel, and Herschel made it a lot heavier, a lot sturdier than the original.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It was kind of heavy, and a lot of different things that we've changed that I've did with the Sky Wheel that they never could get it to run straight and stuff like that. And I came up with ideas where they put the balance on the opposite side where all the ballast that works the lights and stuff, we put a weight on the other side of the axle that would kind of straighten it out.
Okay.
So it's different things that you do in your lifetime to try to correct things. And I've seen rides where we used to use L. Schumer motors just to run the rides, like the Tilt-A-Whirl, mm-hmm. like Eli 5, you know, the Ferris wheels and stuff like this. I've seen so much in the industry of change, which is coming to be a tremendous operation, the way the lights are with all the ride inspectors and stuff like this. Without that, we'd be in a bad shape. I think myself personally, we're safer. The carnival rides are safer than some of the amusement rides that are in parks because they never take them down and set them up. You understand? And they don't see some of the stuff that needs to be corrected. So that's very important. You understand? The policies that we had on North American Midway was unreal with all of our employees, all clean outfits every day, and in the operation, it was a beautiful, beautiful. I was very lucky to, with Tony Diaz was running the unit right here, and Danny Houston, and Mike Williams, the one that when he first bought the operation, you understand, and got all five shows to go together, he was the guy that really got it going real good too. I mean, I've worked for some real good people in my lifetime, fantastic yeah. people that know what the heck they were talking about, you understand? And I've seen a lot of these guys that I've worked for that they were younger. And they were younger, and I used to probably introduce them to the proper people and do things like that. So it and they knew that I got energy. That's one thing they know. That nobody can say that. I could outwork anybody because I believe in one thing, is keeping the thing going. All I know is how to move a carnival, you understand? And I'm trying to figure what I'm going to do from now on. I might, by golly, find another job somewhere on another carnival. You never can tell.
There you go. What happened to Century 21 shows? How did that end?
Well, that, see, my father finally, he bought so much stuff from Chance, you understand, that he had to finally go and merge with the Murphy brothers.
Right.
There was three or four shows that we got together with, you understand, and then we merged together, and then I took a show called Shows of Tomorrow, you understand, and I had to handle that for a while, for 2 years, yes, with Jerry Murphy, which Jim Murphy's brother. I had to do that, and then I went back to, that's when I went with Jim Murphy, eventually, that I went there, and I started to have his operation, and I moved that show like it was lightning, you understand?
That's because, bluegrass shows at that point, right?
Yes, yeah, that was yeah, bluegrass shows right here.
Was Murphy's conglomerate at that time, was that called Amusement Corporation of America? Was that with the name of it?
No.
That was Link Shows.
No, that was a different.
Oh, it was a different thing. Okay.
Yeah, right.
But it was like a big conglomerate, though, of several shows then.
Worldwide.
Yeah, it was worldwide. Yeah.
Oh, that's right, worldwide. Okay.
And so that was, you know, there was so many different things people were trying to do things, and then when the way this North American Midways with Mike Williams, that he got it together, you understand, with the one guy, I got to think of his name right now, they got together and they bought five different shows, you understand.
Are you talking about Michael Solomon or Fred Rosen?
Yeah, Fred Rosen, you understand? He was a funny duck. But, you know, he didn't know what show people were. I mean, he had the knowledge and stuff like that. And, but, you know, I go back when Frankie Sidecheck, he was a young kid, and he used to follow me around the Midway, you understand? So I go back with a lot of these guys years ago, which I can go back with some of the past presidents of the Showman's League of America. The only one I never got to know too much was Buffalo Bill, because he was a little before me. But everybody, I was a president in 76. Everybody from Buffalo Bill to me, they're all dead.
Oh.
And the people after me, they're dead. I'm the last one on the totem pole, you understand? That and I go back, and if you look at the book, the yearbook and all that, I go back with some of the guys that I got to meet when I was very young, and when they started making the outdoor amusement business, I was in the Sherman House when they had the five guys carnivals, and my father,
OABA,
I said, there's no way possible you guys will be able to get together. I said, I'm going to have to stay in the room in case I have to kick somebody's ass. Excuse my language.
And because who was that? That was John Vivona and Jimmy Straits and your dad.
Yeah, it was just something else. And then when we got through with that right here, I says, I can't believe it. And that really started the thing. I was right there in the room, standing in the back of the room. I said, Dad, I'm going to stay there just in case there's going to be some fighting going on. But they got the thing going, and that was, I was so proud. And I was a director too, you understand, for about 10 years or whatever it was. My father was the president of it and stuff like this. He was on it with Maury Schaefer with 60 Minutes. He was the president at the time, but he was live. I don't know if you ever got that copy of 60 Minutes.
No, I'd love to see that. That'd be great.
Yeah, that was fantastic. He came, I think he came when was playing a spot. I can't remember it right offhand. Rome, Georgia.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And he came with that. But see, he tried to make it look like, you know, I can't tell you what another guy's doing with a carnival. You can't tell a guy. All you're president of the organization. And so they wanted to try to say that every carnival was the same. No, every carnival is not the same. Everybody runs differently. You understand? I can't count what this guy's doing down there. And so I've seen so much in my life. I mean, I should probably write a book from the start. I think that's a great idea. But maybe some of the things I put in the book, that probably guys would have to get out of the carnival industry.
But back then, who were some of the shows when you were growing up? Who were some of the shows and show owners that you really admired, and why?
Well, see, my father was very, he knew everybody. He knew everybody by their first names and stuff like that. The old man Straits was he was young, and I can remember when he was in service and his father died, and we come and visited him, and he didn't know nothing about the carnival. He was always in service, you understand? And so he did pretty good, and so we kind of liked him. But there was a lot of people like Rod Link. Like Rod Link was I respected this guy right here. And why? Because he would get up early in the morning. He'd be up early in the morning, and I get up early in the morning. And I said, what are you doing out here? You're the owner, you understand? And because he would get up, he would see what was going on, you understand? And one thing I got to say about him, that he did it, there's another guy a lot like him too, was Danny Houston. He gets up early in the morning, he goes around, sees what's going on behind. A lot of people don't do that. But I'm always the type of guy, I'm always up early myself. I knocked on his door one time. I said, Danny, you going to get up or let's rock and roll? You understand? Johnny Portamont was very, very good too. You understand? They had they lived out of Alabama. You understand? They had a good, we used to have some real good state fairs that they had, different state fairs where they have meetings and stuff like that. I got a lot of education with stuff like that. Was very, very good, right? There's so much in this industry that I could go back. You know, it's hard to say everything. I love this industry. This industry is very good, and you're doing a fantastic job. You bring out a lot of things in life that people really need to see. You understand? There's so many people in this industry, younger people, that I can just, I know they're still in the industry, but the trouble now, they're all dying. I'm all by myself. You understand? So it's altogether different, right?
Well, it sounds like you're going to live forever the way you're going.
Well,
strong.
I keep myself pretty active. I believe in that one thing. It's I don't know how long I can still keep on kicking, but I got my coach sitting at my house right here. I'm ready to rock and roll. You understand?
You know, you said your dad knew everybody in the business, and I'm always fascinated with history. Like, you know, nowadays you have planes, you have conventions, you have different things, you see each other, the carnival, but how did they get to know each other back then? You know, it seems like phones and everything now, but how did they get to know each other so well back then? Showman's clubs.
Yeah, that was a lot with the showman's clubs and stuff like that. Started a lot of that. With the showman's clubs, like they had the one down in Tampa. But see, a lot of I was president of St. Louis. I was the second vice president. Dufour was for 2 years. I was the third vice president of the club right then, you know what I'm saying? So I've seen all these, there's been a lot of presidents since then, but there's one thing I believe, this is what I believe in. what's got this world messed up a little bit, I think, the media could change everything a little bit, you understand? So the carnival people kept it all together. They might not like each other, but they all stuck together. And the OABA has changed a lot of that, and they're doing a tremendous job for our industry.
Helping keep people together. What about, did you have much interaction with Royal American shows?
Yes, because we used to, we had our Space Wheels with Royal American shows, you understand, over there. We had Sadie Hawkins, you understand, and then
it was a fun house,
and we played up in Canada with all three rides. We had all the rides up there, the Seattle Wheel,
Space Wheel,
Space Wheels, and up there. So I know that, and I really enjoy Canada. People are very, very, they can stand in line forever.
So nice.
Have you ever been up there at any of the fairs in Canada?
Yes. They're so nice.
They're very wonderful. I really enjoyed, I'm going to kind of miss it this year. You understand?
The A circuit.
Yeah, well, you know, just to see what's going on, because I got a lot of friends, and I can get anything done there with machine shops and stuff like that. I got connections, and it's once I meet a person, they're not going to forget me, because I like to get to know them real good. Face to face is what it's all about, and I have a lot of connections up there, which I think they're going to be all right, even though I'm not there. I'm for them 100%.
Well, that's so important that you just mentioned it, that a lot of people don't think about too, is, you know, having those resources when you're at a spot like machine shops and people that'll build things. And, you know, it's amazing if you see a guy like yourself or any other key guy in a carnival, he's got a Rolodex or, you know, I guess a phone now that has contacts in each town that can get just about anything done in that town.
Anything
because that's
done,
so
I
important.
Can get it done. I don't care what time of day it is, what time of night it is. You understand? I've won respect for these people, you understand? And that's very important. you'll usually everybody think, oh, you're just a carny. No, you're not. It's the way you lay yourself down to those people, you understand? And if they once you win them over, you understand? The one thing you got to lose, and if you're a salesman or whatever you are, you sell yourself first, then you sell the product later. That's very important in life. You understand, with business and anything like that. That's what I tell a lot of people. I says, don't sell your product. Sell yourself to the person.
That's amazing.
Got me?
Absolutely. Wise advice. How is working for Jerry Murphy? We don't, you know... I guess if we're people that are maybe 10 years older or so, remember, you know, bluegrass and is a big, big show and stuff. But I guess people nowadays, it's beginning to fade from memory a little bit. But bluegrass was a big force in the carnival business.
Well, Jerry was very, very sharp. You understand? I was at his funeral not too long ago. He was 2 years younger than me. You understand? Jerry was, and his brother, Jim, he's 80 years old. You understand now? And I talk to him every once in a while.
I'd like to get him to come on for an interview too. I would love to have Jimmy Murphy on.
Well, I could probably, you never know about how people are, but Jerry passed away not too long ago, but maybe two years ago or something like this. And he was a very nice gentleman. Me and him got along real good. Him and my father were very close. He thought as my father is maybe his second father, you understand, that you see in people. And me and Jim were right, together. We've been in Russia together. We've been all over trying to put business over in Russia years and years ago, you understand. And you couldn't do nothing back in those days. In Russia in the 80s. So I've seen a lot so much in this industry, that
you played the Nebraska State Fair. What were some of the other big fairs you played with bluegrass?
I played Plant City. I played the Iowa State Fair for 50 years.
Iowa
was a tremendous fair, and the fair that I can say probably that I really say this really is in Canada is the Calgary Stampede. That is one of a kind.
Yes, everybody says that. Everybody says that. I've never been there. That.
Oh, it's just unreal. I mean, the people there, you know, and then in Toronto is more days and stuff like this. But there's a lot of good fairs in this country. You understand?
And what are some of your favorites?
Well, I mean, you just look. I play Mobile, Alabama. I played them all. I played the Big E. And one of our units played the Big E. You understand? And then you can go down to Columbia, South Carolina. You understand? Columbia, South Carolina. Tremendous fair. A lot of the fairs. People were always going to have fairs because people want to do something. Sometimes yes. It gets a little bit tougher. And with problems, they got to get out there and just seem like they got to do something. You know, so carnival people, and fairs, I think, will go on for a long time after I'm dead and gone. You understand? You never know about what happens in life. I think I'm going to hang on there for a while. I don't know how long I'm going to hang on, as long as I keep myself in pretty good shape and stuff like this. I'm sure glad that what you do for the industry is very, very important. Now, when they used to have the amusement business years and years ago, mm-hmm. You understand? Mm-hmm. I got a magazine back. They had a magazine back in those days. You would have 3 months, 3 months in a pile. I got that back. It's probably 100 and some years old. You understand? The magazine. That I have it. I don't know how I got it. My father must have got it, but I've had it. It has 3 months in there all one time. Tells about the fairs in Toronto and different fairs. It's kind of amazing just to read it.
Read the history.
Hey, you come here. I have it at my coach. I'd like to have you read it. You would be dumbfounded.
I love reading those old ones because you mentioned something before that reminded me of something I read with Straits. Because I was reading an old AB when the father had passed away, a lot of people didn't think Mr. Straits was going to make it because they didn't think he was experienced, and it was all kinds of, you know.
Experience. That's when me and my father went to visit him. I'm trying to think of the name of the town. It's in Georgia someplace. We went to visit him.
Albany or?
Albany. I think that's where it was at. And he really appreciated that. You understand? See what
show of support. I'm sure everybody's out to get him at that point.
See, in 1996, Jim Murphy and I wanted to leave for a year and see what happens. So I took my wife. She wanted to go some places. We went up. We were visiting some of the different fairs, and I stopped by Chance Manufacturing. And I seen him, and he wanted to talk to me. He says, Wayne, we're having a problem with this ride right there, with the Chaos ride. And I says, well, let me just see what happens on vacation. So it was on vacation. Then when I got back off the vacation, then he said, Wayne, why don't you come on and try to help me? Well, I finally went there and I said, well, here's what I'm going to do first. I want all your engineers to come with me on a takedown night. And I want you to learn what it is to tear a ride down. Yes, and so they start. I said, throw this away, throw that away. You never should handle nothing only once. And so they finally learned how to do it the proper way. You understand? Because I believe the people, engineers, want to learn how to do one thing, look straight ahead. You got to look all the different directions and see what you can do. So that was one good experience I had there with these guys. I was a little kind of scared to get in my car because some of the guys we had a fire. I mean, the Chance did, and not And so I was kind of worried about if I could get my own car, I had to check underneath it every day, make sure it was all right.
That reminds me of like some of the manufacturers, especially the ones that started out as Carnival guys, really seem to be the best because they have the, you, what you were kind of referring to, they have the real world experience of moving the ride first.
They had the hands on.
Right.
Yes, and but they lost.
It makes a big difference because then they can refine things and it's ready for use. Whereas, like you say, if it's just an engineer, you know, theorizing something, thinking about something, until you actually move it, it's not the same thing.
See what they did with Chance with that Chaos ride. He says, we build the ride, everything works real good, but we get it on the, you get it, we can't make everything work. I said, the reason why, you got 208 voltage in your shop right here, and the Carnivals have 225 voltage. It didn't have enough voltage, you understand? And so, oh, they didn't realize that, so we had to change a lot of things. They had built, when they built the ride, you had to change so you could change a lot of things.
Got it. What, when Bluegrass got sold to Panacek, the Bell City, yeah, what did you do after the next year?
Well, I left them before. Yeah,
sure. Oh, you did? Okay. Well,
I left them before that. But then after 2 years, he finally, because I was handling all the stuff. I was moving the stuff like it was lightning.
Right.
But when I left, they finally had to make a few changes, and it didn't work out the best for him. You understand? Then he got sick too, a little bit too. And his son JJ, which was a real good person, I raised him practically, his son, and he did him and his sister, but it just wasn't the same. So that's when Jim sold it to Panacek, you understand? And now Panacek sold it also, and now he sold it.
Yeah.
But that's just how things go.
But where did you go at that point?
Well, that's when I went, when I...
Mike Williams.
Yeah, Mike Williams. That's in 2024, you understand? That's when I said, I went there and I seen Mike Williams, and Mike Williams says...
2004.
Yeah, 2004.
Yeah, 2004. That's when, I forget how old I was, 60 years old or something like that, 60-some years old. And so they said, well, you're going to hire a guy like that? He says, that's right, because he can be able to put everything together, you understand, for the Canada route. And we did it like it was lightning, you understand? And I enjoyed it, you understand? And that, and what Mike Williams said to, he says, he's the first guy that I wanted to hire after I put the operation together for the
Canada. After he put name together.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a high compliment. I mean, they built the largest carnival in history. And the first person they hire is you. That's pretty amazing.
That was the first one.
You're the first round draft pick.
First person of every person he did. Yes, and so you know, so some things do add up in lifetime. I say this: is as old as I was the only person moving a carnival at my age, even last year, still moving it at my age. Pack of these guys are all dead, and they never were working that much. You understand? And so, you know, you never, my knowledge, I guess my knowledge, you can always have knowledge that they got in 2020 when a lot of the problems that people had, a lot of the good people in not in the carnival industry, but any manufacturing places, they lost a lot of machinists, they lost a lot of that. That's you never take that experience away, you understand? And that's one thing I still have till this day, that I do have. That's right. I can always get something done. I don't believe in the word no. I've never in my life, I believe, don't tell me a word no. If I can't do it, it can't be done. You understand? I can always do that. With the knowledge, you can get people from Africa or people from Mexico. Sometime I've always listened to their ideas. Sometime they might have a better idea. You can't never think you know it all. but you can always listen and see. You might be able to learn something. Very important with young people.
The rides are so different nowadays than they were. How has the show changed, you know, over the years for you?
Well, it used to be years ago when they changed to the hydraulics. You understand? The hydraulics, and that was a new thing, and everybody didn't know much about hydraulics and stuff like this. But now it's electronic. You buy a ride from overseas, you understand? You got to make sure you know everything about that electronics and stuff like that. That's very important, you understand? That it's a ride can run. You got to make sure, and the ride inspectors are really right on top of it, you understand, that they do have the different conventions and stuff like this, where they have the ride, some of the old times like Dudley and all the, I knew all the ride inspectors and stuff like this, you understand, and they do a tremendous job. They really are very good for our nation and for what job they do. You might meet some ride inspector thinks he knows more than, but sometimes, usually when you get a brand new ride, they ask the carnival person, what about this, what about that? They're getting the experience from the carnival person.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you know it best. I mean, they don't know it. They've never seen it before.
Then they, see, I don't like a person to try to tell, I never stick my nose out. I let with ride inspectors and that, but they know when I get involved with it, they know that I'll do it. I'll show them, you understand? I don't take no for an answer. I've been like that. I've seen it. Nobody else has seen what I've seen in my lifetime. Nobody has seen it and getting out and still doing it. At 87 years old, still doing it out there. You understand? So
it's incredible.
That is, and it's like I said before, it's so important that you're doing what you're doing, but there's so many different people in this industry. There are a lot of younger people now, you understand? But that's the thing, that they have respect for me because they know I care for the working person, you understand? And every meeting I ever do or anything like this, I look at the working person. The working person, what it's all about. He makes the person upstairs be proud of himself. Like I told that to Danny Houston, I said, Danny, you got very, very good people. You understand? And that's why Danny, sometimes he calls me a lot of times, and we're very good friends. His whole family is phenomenal, and they got a tremendous operation. You understand?
I really do. Yeah, he's very impressive, Danny. Especially with that farming he does at 5 a.m. before he goes to work. That's pretty.
I knock on his door. I couldn't believe it. I said, you want to be able to rock and roll? Let's go.
Name was the last show that you worked for so far. And, you know, how was that doing the A circuit? And were you on the international unit, or did you consult like for the whole company?
Well, I did it for the international unit. You understand? There's one thing that I've done. Like I say, we are the big fair we play down there in Miami. That's what they're going down to, the Dade County Youth Fair down there. I've took every year for 10 years. I took all the key people, all the key ride people, I take them all to dinner. I had about 50 of them last year. Took every one of them to dinner. You understand? On me, and I did it because I felt that they were so important to the operation on every unit, you understand? And this might be the one year I don't make it there because I'm not there, you understand? But you can't never tell. They got a tremendous operation, and I think they're going to do very, very well. And they always know. They can always call me, you understand? But heck, I might be working for another carnival. You never know about me.
Was it really fun or eye-opening or a great experience, though, to play some of those fairs, the Canadian fairs you mentioned? Because the name route or the old Conklin route or whatever you want to call it is really got some tremendous events.
Oh, yes, and we have big jumps. We have a jump that you can never drive at night. I'm a type of guy who could drive 20 hours straight, you know, with my coach. I mean, I just, when I start driving, I can drive, you understand? And I just got that ability. I don't know why it is. I must have a second wind or whatever you call it, that I can drive, and I like driving. I like to leave the last guy to leave, and I might be the first person there. I don't care. 2,000 miles. Right.
Those jumps are big. I remember when Morris Vivona was alive, they went and looked at the A circuit one time when it was up for bid, and he said, it was so far, I don't think our trucks could make it. And he said, we drive by car, and he said, forget it. There's no way.
Yeah, it's a challenge, and they do have a tremendous. I think I helped with a lot of that production and stuff like this by moving the show, because that was my prime thing, to get the thing down and then get it moved and stuff like that. I helped them out, and so I think they're going to be all right. Which, you know, they know I'm for the working people. They call me every once in a while, and I call them. They're like my second family. I took my daughter to Mobile, Alabama, and told all the guys goodbye. Yes, because I was trying to get my hip back in shape, which I'm getting that done right here. They didn't want to operate because I don't have no pain. And so I'm working out, and I'm getting around pretty goddamn good. And I had my daughter there. I said, well, this is my daughter right here, Kelly Mitchell. And I says, well, and then I said, well, you guys are really my family too. And my daughter said, am I chopped liver? You understand? Because you don't realize they are my family. Same, you've been there for 10 months a year. I've been with the carnival people and 2 months, all my life. I only spent 2 months with my family. You understand, during the Christmas and that right there, and then I was on the road. So
it's amazing. So and you started, of course, you mentioned before, Galaxy amusement sales with the lights and all that stuff. And your boys are now running it, Scott and Todd, and they're doing a good job.
Yeah, they do fantastic. You understand? I don't think I could work for them. They'd probably fire me. You understand? So, but. Because I'm a type of guy probably knocking on the door in the morning before they're up, you know. But it's I'm very proud, very lucky. I'm very lucky that I had the family that I had, you understand, that I do have.
Yes.
And it's just going to be a challenge to me this year by not being on the road. So I'm kind of figuring what I really want to do. I might get some ads out of this thing. These guys might be calling me, hey, Wayne, you want to come to work for us for a couple of years? You never can tell.
I think touring the carnivals will be fun if you just go from carnival to carnival and visit, stay, yeah, you know,
and then voice
as long as you
opinion.
Want or whatever.
And voice my opinion right here.
Voice your opinion. Give them some tips. Even be like a traveling consultant.
Yeah, even Guy Levitt's wife coming. She says, man, but we really respect you. Well, and that made me feel real good, you know, Sam, that you can have people that recognize you.
Nice people, too. So what an amazing career. What an amazing life you've lived. Or it's not over yet. You're still, like you said, you might. Who knows what you'll be doing next year.
I still believe, you know, I never said I wanted to live below 90, but I you can't never tell. You understand? You know, the most important thing in life, I'll explain one thing to you. The most important thing in life is money. Without money, you can't do nothing. You can't go buy a hamburger. You can't go buy gas. You can't buy food. But it's at a point, say I go to the doctor, just for a quick thing, I'm going to run this by you. You go to a doctor and the doctor says, hey, Mr. Kuntz, you got 2 months to live. Well, you know, I'm a carnival guy. You don't think I'm going to believe that doctor. I'm going to go see another doctor. Now I see another doctor, and the doctor says, hey, Wayne, he said he was going to live for that. I'll make sure you can live another 2 more years and do anything you want to do. I say, you got to be kidding me. What is the catch? I want all your money. Now, I told this to many people, very wealthy people. Everybody said, give me the 2 more years. So it goes to show you, money is not very important when it comes back down to your last part of your life.
No, and I think you said it, I mean, in a way, before, you know, you're right. Money is important because it's a means to do something. But, right. You know, your respect for the working people and your mentoring of those people and the love you've generated from them towards you is the most important thing in your life. Yes, you've made money doing it, which is a byproduct of your work, because you've done a good job. But I think, you know, when it comes down to it, it's those relationships you've built and the things you've done that are, that'll be the most important to you when you reflect back.
The only thing I told my kids one day, this is kind of like a joke. I says, there's a couple of things I want in my casket. What is that? I want a fire extinguisher, a jackknife, and a flashlight. I said, I just want to make sure I'm going the right way.
Well, Mr. Koons, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I can't thank you enough. What great stories, and hope to see you. I'm sure you'll be in Gibbtown. Hopefully we'll see you there. And
I'll see you in Gibbtown. I might bring that book by to you, and I'll let you read it.
Please, please. And if you mention to Mr. Murphy about coming on, I'd love to have him.
Okay, it sounds good.
It'd be great to chronicle their history a little bit too. Thank you again. Thanks. Thank your technical assistant, Scott, there. He's a good man, and we appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
God bless you.
This podcast is brought to you by Innovative Ticketing. Is the ticketing source made for the amusement industry. Our staff of professionals can guide you through your setup, assist with customer service, even on the weekends when you most need it, and help increase your sales through promotions that work. Innovative Ticketing is the ticketing source made for the amusement industry. Sign up today at innovativeticketing.com.